Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Elizabeth Tromko. Hello.
Hey, who is the writer-director of the new movie, What They Had. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here and a delight to be in D.C.
All right, so you and I know what it's about, but for our listeners who have, maybe they haven't even seen the trailer yet, just give them the basic premise real fast.
Sure, it's about a family that is coping with caregiving for around the matriarch's memory loss related to Alzheimer's disease and the sort of challenges that they face in trying to solve kind of an unsolvable problem and the reckoning that it prompts in all of them. And you know, it kind of spawns a coming of age at every stage of life, like three generations of coming of age.
Yeah. Was this, since you actually wrote it yourself, was this something that you pulled from? I mean, did you have a parent or a relative that went through this, or where did that personal connection come from?
Yes, it's been a long journey of writing and, you know, making the film. It was a 7-year journey from the first draft, but it did all start with my grandmother and her Alzheimer's diagnosis and the way that we coped with it and the sort of surprising pieces that were different than what I was expecting. And, you know, just wanting to preserve a memory, right, that I saw with watching her, how precious her memories are. And I didn't want to, this was people that I wasn't ready to let go of and wanted to see if I could take their life and put it into something else and give it a new life.
If you'll indulge, slight detour from the movie for 1 second, tell me about grandma. What was her name? The grandparents are the best. What was her name? And, you know, what about her still makes you smile when you look back at her?
Oh, thank you for asking that. Her name was Pat Becker. And she was just, I mean, she just was the most generous, loving, biggest hearted, like warm spirited human being on the planet. And, you know, she and my grandfather had a beautiful love affair that they started when they were teenagers in a small farm town in Illinois. And, you know, they were always together and they were flirting at the breakfast table, you know, up into 40 plus years of marriage and 4 kids later. So
still after 40 years.
Yeah, it was.
Sometimes that breakfast table stuff goes away after a couple of years.
That's what was so remarkable.
Or if you're Susan Cain, it gets really long.
Yeah. I love that reference. Yes.
Well, when you have filmmakers in here, you can actually drop that stuff.
Yes, I love that.
Like, what are you talking about?
I love that.
But that's sweet that they stayed close.
They did, yes.
So you went through all that, you know, the heartache of all of that, watching that happen, and then you're just, it's swirling, and you're like, I want to capture this for maybe other families that are going through it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, at the time, it was really for my family. Like, I just wasn't, my grandparents had this beautiful love story, and I just thought it was really heartbreaking that, you know, the end of their story could be that she would just sort of slowly lose touch with who he was. That was heartbreaking. And so I felt like in my eldest grandchild, you know, way of wanting to fix everybody's, you know, problems and make everybody's grief go away, that if I, you know, I just wrote this for us and for me to process my own grief and to keep like the joy and the laughter and we were such a family of laughers. We all like, we just teased each other mercilessly, but like in the most loving, good-hearted Chicago way. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would all go away after her diagnosis, but it didn't. We laughed our way through it just like we did everything else that was hard. So
that's good.
Yeah, I just wanted to like write it for all of us. And I don't know, it just felt like the right thing to do. And then here we are 7 years later. And I've just been following that instinct of the right thing to do. And now we have this a beautiful film. I couldn't have dreamed this up, really.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, so you write the screenplay, which trust me, I know it's an insane process in itself. But then, all right, so you have the draft you're ready with, and you get into a little thing that we screenwriters know as the Nickel Fellowships, and you won it? You won the sucker.
Yes.
That takes some doing.
Thank you.
So it's for like unproduced writers, right? I think you had to earn like $5,000 or less, but most people haven't earned anything yet. So most people qualify.
Yes.
And you did it. That's amazing. So when you find that out, and then we'll get to Sundance Lab, but how does that actually happen? You find out you win that. You're watching it go farther and farther, and then how do you get into the Sundance Lab?
Well, actually, Sundance came before that.
Okay.
The Sundance Lab was via, like, I had an agent, and they suggested that I apply for that, and I did, and was, like, so delighted to get involved with the Sundance community because they're so supportive at every stage, and it's really, like, a family of supportive filmmaking and creative artists. So that came first. And then the Nickel Fellowship was that same year. I found out that I won in late that year.
And taking into that, watching you, you're advancing, because you know they're like, you're a quarterfinalist.
Yes,
you're a
you know this. Yes, yeah, of course. Yes, that's amazing. Yes, and then and then they let you know you're a finalist. I think on the phone, Greg Beal called and said you're a finalist, and then they called. Then Robin Swycord called a few days later and had the entire rest of the committee on speakerphone, and we're like, guess what? You won.
So
and yeah, it was so surreal and wonderful and overwhelming and. Yeah, it was a huge gift to the project. It was an honor, really.
That's so great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and they show you the little cat, like the little anonymous like feedback, and you're like, is that my movie? And
then, yes.
So you win that, and then how does that? You said it was a big gift to the project. So how does that actually go from winning that to how did that, let's say, fast track it so you could actually direct this baby?
Thank you. First of all, it introduced us to Albert Berger, who was on the deciding committee, that he and his partner, Ron Yerxa, are these wonderful independent producers who have, you know, they've done a number of Alexander Payne films and Little Miss Sunshine and
those kind of movies. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like legends in the indie film space. So they expressed some interest and we met and after that, and, you know, they decided to come on as producers, which certainly gave me a ton of confidence and support and whatever, but also it kind of inspired everybody else to take a leap of faith with me as a first timer. And you know, also the Nickel helps the screenplay get circulated. The agencies started to read it, and then it developed some championship within the agencies who would send it to actors. And, you know, it really takes a village with a small movie like this, especially when it's your first. Yeah. And I mean,
you directed other like shorts and things before, I would imagine, no? Or was this really first time out of the game?
Yeah, I did like a little short that I had tried to just figure out whether or not I was able to, you know, to survive behind the camera. That I'd like shot it at my house and it was very small. But this was really, you know, this was really like the thing. And I just kind of gave everything in the last 7 years to make this happen.
So. What would you tell other first-time filmmakers, having just gone through the process? Do you look back at your first-time self before the shoot even began and would tell this person, would you be like, oh, look out for this next time? Anything you learned through the process? So just describe what that process was
Yes, like. No, for sure. It is, nothing can prepare you, I don't think, to go into it other than just living through it each day.
Yeah.
And the thing, I think there were so many bits of words of wisdom that I got from, it was so helpful to like watch director commentaries on DVDs and read interviews with other directors and watch interviews on YouTube with other directors. Probably more helpful than learning about lenses and learning about, you know, camera moves and whatever. Right. That was because there is no right answer and everyone has to find their own way. But I think probably one of the best pieces of wisdom I got was to take it one shot at a time. That's all you can do. It's like, don't worry about 10 minutes from now or 10 hours from now or tomorrow. Right. Take it just today, like what's right in front of you, because or else you will, you know, fall over and not get up. It's an overwhelming task.
I've done that during interviews sometimes. I just fall over and just don't get up, and you have to just finish it on your own.
Yeah, the best of us, it happens.
All right, casting this thing. Hilary Swank and Michael Shannon, the whole brother-sister dynamic. God, they're two of the best actors that are going today. How did you decide that they were perfect for the role? And then watching it back, you know, are there any moments where you're like, oh yeah, thank God they were in the movie. They really elevated that scene, you know?
Oh, constantly. Yeah. Yes. Hilary came in. She was the first actor that you know, said yes. And she was, that was, again, another huge leg up for the project, because having an actress like her who is so everything that she is, right? I don't even need to explain what she is. She needs no introduction. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Having her part of it inspired, again, confidence in me that my voice was worth hearing. And also in other actors, that they wanted to know that if Hilary Swank believes in this, then they should too. And they all wanted to work with her. You know,
so she's sort of the linchpin. Once you got her, the rest kind of follow.
Yes, the rest really followed. And Michael is just, you know, he's just a gift to any director because he's so committed and such an amazing chameleon, and, you know, comes in and nails it on the first take and then gives you 12 more that give you goosebumps. So
he can literally do anything, like
really,
any role.
Anything.
Chameleon's the perfect word for it.
I don't think we have even scratched the surface on what Michael will do.
I think you're right, actually.
Yes.
Which is crazy to say because he's done so much already. But I think you're right. I think he's like just starting to hit that stride in a weird way. It feels weird saying that, but
yeah.
But yeah, I mean that's great, and it's a tricky relationship too because you know it's like one sibling trying to convince them that it's time to help you know to make this happen. So how do you was that a thing when you're writing the screenplay and then directing it that you're really I mean that conflict is vital to make the engine move here?
Yes, definitely. Conflict is like everything, but I think, you know, it was also really fun to write those two voices because, you know, they're kind of these two sides of my personality, mm-hmm. right? Like Hillary's character, Bridget is struggling to sort of figure out, you know, not how like, you know, it's that the thing that I dislike about myself, right? That I, you know, I'm a pleaser and I'm worried about people, you know, I think as a woman, we struggle with this or to generalize widely, right? That like, you know, to just... that our own voices are worth hearing and that we can listen to ourselves and that what we want and what we need is okay. And, you know, we don't need to worry about being liked every second of the day, right? Like, do I need to worry about being likable today? Whereas Michael's this other voice in my head that's like calling out that other person and being like, stop making things difficult. Just be who you are. Like, who cares? Yeah. Stop worrying about it so much. Like, just be, don't be such a coward. And so, you know, in a way, Michael's character is the character I aspire to be, right? Yeah. And so it was really a blast to write those two, you know, sort of warring voices in my mind. They stepped into them so beautifully. I can't say enough, like, what a joy it was to watch all of those actors step in and be a family and do it so immediately and so instinctually. I just tried not to breathe so that I didn't, you know, mess it up.
I think that's so fascinating because, you know, maybe a lot of writers would be like, okay, so this protagonist is based on me and then maybe I'll base the brother on my own brother or something. No, I like that you drilled down into yourself and the other parts of yourself, like almost like fears and insecurity self was one and then the one that I'm aspiring to be is the other. And yeah, there's this little crossover, but I love that they both come from you. I mean, write what you know, right? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ms. Danner. I mean, also needs no introduction.
Yes.
How did you, you know, I mean, when you think of Alzheimer's roles, we think, you know, Julianne Moore just won an Oscar for Still Alice, which, come on, I mean,
amazing.
Crying thinking about it. I don't want to say how do you make it different from that, because they're completely different movies. But, you know, I mean, that's, you're thinking about that, but, like, how do you think Danner approached it similarly or differently than that? Or did she just make it her own?
Well, Blythe was very, she was hesitant, really. She had quite a bit of anxiousness about stepping into that role because she didn't really know anyone with Alzheimer's disease or any kind of memory loss intimately. And when I was writing this character, Alzheimer's presents in a number of different ways, like really infinite. And of course, it's only, I never wanted Blythe's character to be just her Alzheimer's, right? Like, right. I wanted her to be this whole, full, real, round woman that she was the day that she got diagnosed, and that was just another piece of her. And so I really wanted to capture my grandmother and honor her and you know, and capture the way that she presented these symptoms as well as all her other qualities. Mm-hmm. And Blythe just had that. If I was casting a woman for my grandmother, that would be Blythe, regardless of the Alzheimer's component. So that, I think, was able to anchor Blythe a bit. And also, and then she watched a bunch of videos of my grandmother and got some of the physical manifestations my grandmother fell into as the disease
progressed. Oh, actually watched videos of while your grandmother was going through Alzheimer's.
Yes, yeah, because my grandmother kind of did these physical symptoms, like,
what would you say?
Like with her hands. She had a lot of anxiety. I think there's a lot of anxiety of, like, not knowing who you are, where you are, and what is around you, and knowing, having also the awareness of, like, I don't want to come across as the only crazy person in this room.
And that manifested itself in her hands.
She just was very, like, it was a kind of a nervous gesture that she would do. So Blythe, you know, sort of, I think that also helped ground her. And, you know, but it was just a really instinctual, like, trusting dynamic. And Blythe just played it so beautifully. I just said, just trust your instincts. She just was able to sort of fall lyrically into this woman who was, you know, lost, really lost. That's how it felt. She was just looking for something. She didn't know what she was looking for, and sort of feeling like a ghost in these conversations, you know, not sure what is going on and just trying to sort of keep up and knowing, she, you know, that she couldn't do that. It was hard to hard to watch, certainly. But Bly did it so beautifully. And
that's, I mean, that is, Bly's character is one sort of heartbreaking thing. Just the confusion of it and the where am I and the, you know, it comes out in the hands. But it's equally heartbreaking in a totally different way for Robert Forster, who's playing the husband, to see your soulmate go through that. How did you work with him to bring that out, or the patience or the frustration, or I guess the reluctance to let go of that?
Well, that was, I wrote that role very much based on my own grandfather and, you know, the kind of man he was. And I, you know, when this all happened, I wasn't sure who, you know, I don't know who still to this day I'm more heartbroken for, right? Who I was more devastated for, her or him or, but Robert just like got it. I knew like very early on in the writing process that Robert was perfect. And he was, and he just stepped into it. He got it so immediately. It was so like internally, so viscerally. I just was sitting there pinching myself with everyone. They just got it. It was incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. In terms of our listeners are hearing this, they might be, oh, that sounds intriguing. I'm going to check it out. What do you want them to take away from this? Let's say, certainly for listeners that have gone through this, I mean, they'll get one thing out of it. But even if you don't, you know, even if you haven't gone through it, you know, why come out and check out your movie? Why is that worthwhile?
Well, you know, I think I really wanted to make the kind of Alzheimer's movie that I would actually want to go and watch more than once.
Right.
One that doesn't totally devastate, because, you know, it was really painful and hard, but there were a lot of beautiful moments in it. Like my grandmother at one point thought we were schoolgirls together, you know, like how she might have been at 12. I got to witness that.
Not other people get to see that.
Exactly.
Those little hidden gifts that come out of the disease. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's was what I learned to how to appreciate her wherever she was in her mind and just go with it, like play with her wherever she was. And, you know, she was always the right same spirit. She always had that love of life and laughter and the grace that she lived life. She lived her disease through.
Now it's a blithe spirit.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think also just, you know, there's so many challenges when you're dealing with this, right?
Yeah.
All of us, our families kind of go through this at some point where you suddenly find yourself parenting your parent and co-parenting with your sibling, and you and your sibling maybe didn't ever quite see eye to eye on certain things. And it's just, you know, it's really challenging and hard, and it's hard to be angry with a sick person. And so we kind of take it out on each other. And I've just learned through making the film and how many people have responded to the script and now to the film that, you know, this is really happening to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I don't have any ambition to say that I know anything about how to deal with it or what life is like or what an answer could possibly be. But just to feel like you're not alone and that maybe we can laugh in a way, like find a way to laugh through it. There's a lot of, you know, I really wanted to find that in the film. And so, yes, that's I don't know. Other than that, I just hope people go in and go with whatever they feel.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This was great and flew by, and I got tons of great stuff. So you're a natural.
Oh, thank you so much.
Again, everybody, it's called What They Had, Elizabeth Chomko, and it comes out in D.C. here on October 26th. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. Thank you.